Rich O'Neill joins us. You know, our favorite doctor checkup from the neck up. Good morning, Dr. O'Neill.
Good morning, Trish.
We're
so
happy to have you here in the first part of the show.
Nice
you know,
to
sometimes
you.
I think our listeners miss you if they miss the last part of the show. This will be a real treat for them. This morning, we want to discuss this very interesting concept you have of developing an anti-cancer mindset.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talk about mental and physical health impacting each other, but this is exactly what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, this is great. This is where your thinking really impacts your health, because about 40% of cancers could be prevented by changing your lifestyle.
That's astounding to me. Repeat that.
Because 40% of cancers, 80% of heart disease can be prevented with lifestyle changes.
With lifestyle changes.
It's an amazing figure.
And when we talk about lifestyle changes, we're talking about our heads ruling our impulses, in effect.
Right. In fact, we have to decide what can I do? What are my specific risks of developing cancer? What's my family history? Where are the places that I might develop cancer? And then what can I do to actually lower my risk of cancer? Something that's very useful here is to stop thinking, scaring ourselves with ideas of getting cancer, and start thinking about having a healthier lifestyle.
Sure.
Having a more satisfying life.
Feeling better.
Feeling better, because
yes.
We don't really respond well to fear. We respond well to going things we like.
You know, that's absolutely true. But you've actually put together some steps.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your steps. How can we develop this anti-cancer mindset?
Well, the first thing is to start to think about what is it that where your risk is.
Okay.
Start to pay attention to where there's some real risk for you.
Like my family history kind of
like
thing?
Like your family history, if you have a history of breast cancer or you have a history of colon cancer, those things, you know you're at risk. And then so you let yourself know, there's something I could actually do about that. Then you want to start to pay attention to what you can do.
And
get
you know,
some information.
That's the key, is paying attention. Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad has recently had heart problems. And now all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I'm faced with the fact that I could have heart problems.
Yes. Once you know that, then you can start to collect data. Once you accept that, actually, it's very important. You have to take it in and let yourself know, oh, this is a reality for me.
Yeah.
Don't fight it and push it away. And then you can start to collect data about, well, okay, what's my real risk? You can talk to your doc. You can go to websites. You can go to the American Cancer Society, et cetera, and collect data about, okay, my risk is this. What are the specific things I can do to lower my risk? So, for instance, you can start to eat more fruits and vegetables. Easy. Eat more colorful fruits and vegetables, lots of different colors.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have different kinds of compounds in them that help us to stay healthier.
And that is a making choices thing. When you're talking about that mindset thing, you're saying, I have a chocolate chip cookie here and I have an apple here.
Yes.
Okay, which one am I going to eat?
Right. And it happens at a certain moment, Trish. It's like you have to know, what is the healthy choice and what am I willing to do? Once you get clear about the benefits of going in a certain direction, you're much more likely to do that. But you have to be clear about the benefits. Then when you're what I call the fork in the road, that telling moment, there's the cookie, there's the apple. At that second, if you pay attention to, here's my goal. I don't want to have breast cancer. I don't want to have colon cancer. And if I eat this apple, I'm less likely to develop colon cancer than if I eat this cookie. And sometimes we're going to choose the cookie just because, you know, you got to have a cookie every once in a while in your life.
Sure.
But if you eat more apples and just slowly make that change, you're going to be lowering your risk of cancer. That's a decision you make right at that second, knowing the risk, knowing the benefit, and what you're willing to do.
You know, I hear what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were 25 years old and I had 25 years of history making choices, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not 25 years old.
Right.
I'm more than double that, all right?
Right?
And I say to you, okay, I've been eating this other way all my life, or I have not been making good choices all my life.
Yes.
Isn't it too late for me?
No, it's not too late. You know, there's quite a bit of research. For instance, Dean Ornish's research with heart disease. He looks at people who have existing heart disease, and then he puts them on they decide to do a diet and exercise routine, lowering stress as well, and they find that they can actually reverse the heart disease process in your arteries.
Reverse it.
So if it removes the problem, starts to remove the problem.
Really?
Yeah. So you can do that, and there's every reason to think you can do the same thing with cancer. Like if you eat tomato paste.
Yeah.
There's chemicals in tomato paste.
Lycopene.
For men, lycopene, that if you eat that, that chemical actually fights cancer cells in the lab.
Really?
If you put that chemical in with cancer cells,
yeah,
it reduces their ability to reproduce. So you're actually going to turn the tide by eating right. Exercise does the same thing. There's a tremendous amount of data that shows that exercise reduces the risk of cancer and heart disease.
You know, I know there's so much more to this, Dr. Mm-hmm. O'Neill. As a matter of fact, I understand you're going to be at the Cancer Symposium this Friday speaking about this?
Yes, not only speaking just very briefly, but doing a workshop with folks so folks can determine what are the things that keep me from doing what I already know how to do, know what to do, so that I could lower my cancer risk, so I can begin to move those out of the way and develop a healthier lifestyle.
You know, I find that fascinating. You're not just going to speak about this. You're going to give these folks the tools they need.
Yeah, well, they're actually going to give themselves the tools.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to set up the structure so that they can develop their own action plan for what am I willing to do to make my own life healthier.
I think that's great. I want to remind listeners that the symposium is being held this Friday, October 16th. I know that registration is due by October 13th. Folks can call Upstate Connect at 464-8668 to register and get more information.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Well, Dr. Rich O'Neill, thanks so much for coming by this morning.
Thanks for having me, Tricia. Delight. Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up, stiff man's disease, or getting there from here. Well, folks, 8 out of 10 of us have back trouble sometimes in our lives. Our sedentary lifestyle is one of the reasons, sitting a lot, and psychologists certainly sit a lot. Well, 20-some years ago, after my first son was born, I had a spell of back trouble. It went on for about 2 years. Ouch, 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 and more ouch, ouch. But the other day, I had a major triumph in my life. Ran a 3.1-mile road race, 5,000 meters, with the same son. And won the father-son team division from back pain man to first place man. Amazing. Now, other than wanting to crow a little, all right, a lot, why am I telling you this? Well, back when I had back trouble, I learned to something called stiff man's disease. It just means that after we've had back trouble for a while, we can stop moving around very much because we're afraid of the ouch, ouch when we move this way or that. And we get stiffer and stiffer, and the back gets worse and worse. And of course, one of the things that helps backs get better is moving around, exercising, especially walking. Well, only about a third of us get any real exercise, even though we know even 10 minutes a day of walking cuts our cardiovascular risk and of pushing up the daisies by about a third. So, despite our new motto here at Upstate that knowing changes everything, there are some times we know but we don't do, and that doesn't change anything. I call this stiff brain disease. Enter psychology man. Well, it turns out one of the most powerful, effective things we can do to change, no matter whether we want to lose weight, start moving around more, spend more time with our family, save more moolah, is to keep a close eye on what we're actually doing. And a number of well-designed studies have shown recently that we can make observing ourselves even more powerful if we combine keeping track with setting a reasonable goal. For example, if we want to lose weight, put some index cards in the pocket along with one of those stubby golf pencils and write down everything we eat. Yes, everything. And when we're writing, think about that goal of losing that 5 or 10. Or if we want to walk more, getting a pedometer, one of those little doodads that counts every step we take, helps us take more. But again, combine that with setting a reasonable goal to meet, one that stretches us but not too far, helps us do the do. Say, going from a typical person's 8,000 steps a day, it's the goal 10,000 steps a day. Give it a try. I'll see you at the finish line at the next race. My new goal is to be standing at the finish line, looking back at my son catching up to me again. I'm Dr. Rich, Jim Ryan O'Neill. Thanks for tuning in.